a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
House of Representatives will now come to order. Leading us in prayer today will be Pastor Mike Bishop from the Pier 4 Pier Ministerial Association. Leading our pledge will be Pages Nicole Mesner of Belfouche, Becky Plumage of Pier, and Rebecca Runge of Wessington.
Let us pray. Father, we come before you today and we give you thanks for our great state and all the freedoms that we enjoy here. Father, I pray for this, these representatives, these men and women who have tough decisions ahead of them. Father, I pray for your guidance. I pray, Father, that everything that they do would be pleasing to you, Father. You tell us in your word, if we seek you, we will find you. And when we find you, you will show us great and mighty things. So, Father, my prayer today for these folks is that they would seek you. Father, I thank you for each one of them, their willingness to serve, the giving of their time away from families. Father, I pray that you would surround them, keep them safe as they travel to and from this capital. I pray all these things in the name of the triune God. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Clerk, will please call the roll.
Abdallah, Blake, Boland, Boomgarden, Bruner, Carson, Consett, Cronin, Dielstra, Dennert, Dryden, Elliott, Fargin, Fikert, Feinstein, Gibson, Gosh, Greenfield, Hager, Hansen, Holly, Hickey, Hoffman, Hubble, Hunhoff, Hunt, Ironclaw, Jansen, Jones, Junkie, Killer, Kirkaby, Kirschman, Klochek, Kopp, List, Lucas, Les, Magstad, Miller, Mosier, Munsterman, Nelson, Nordstrup, Olson. Mr. Speaker, a quorum is present.
Speaker's here also. Approval of the journal.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee on Legislative Procedure respectfully reports that the Chief Clerk of the House has had under consideration the House Journal of the 8th day. All errors, typographical or otherwise, are duly marked in the temporary journal for correction, and we hereby move the adoption of the report. Respectfully submitted, Val Rausch, Chair.
All those in favor of approval of the journal signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. If you'll be in recess for 1 second, we have to swear on our pages. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have the privilege of meeting a special individual today. He's been around the Capitol today meeting with several of us in leadership, the governor's office. His name is Martin Loken. He was officially named Canada's Consul General in Minneapolis on July 25, 2008. He is Canada's senior representative in the upper Midwest states of Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Martin joined Canada's Foreign Service in 1990. His previous overseas assignments were at the Canadian Embassy in Prague, 1992 to 1994, and at the Canada's permanent mission to the World Trade Organization and the United Nations in Geneva. In the course of several Ottawa-based assignments at the headquarters of the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade, he has been responsible for a range of geographic and functional issues, including science and technology relations with Japan and global human rights. From 2002 to 2008, he served in the Trade Policy and Negotiations Branch, where he worked on several major trade agreements and negotiations, serving as deputy chief negotiator for the free trade talks with Colombia, Peru, and the European Free Trade Association, chief negotiator for the talks with the Dominican Republic, and duty coordinator for North American Free Trade Agreement. Martin and his wife, Marina Loken, a Minneapolis, Minnesota native and graduate of Carleton College, have two children. He holds bachelor's degrees in systems design engineering and arts from the University of Waterloo. During the course of his studies, he worked for 4 months in 1988 at the Biodynamics Research Unit in the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Martin's leisure time pursuits include running and cross-country skiing. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my privilege and honor to introduce to you Canada's Consul General, Martin Loken. Please welcome him.
Well, thank you very much, Speaker Rausch, and thank you to all the members of the House for allowing me the floor this afternoon. I also want to thank Representative Consett, who has been so helpful in making this Canada Day at the South Dakota Capitol a reality. For my colleagues and I from the Canadian Consulate General in Minneapolis, it's a tremendous honor to witness that you've passed this resolution to honor the strong Canada-South Dakota relationship. You know, our two nations share a partnership that at every level is unique in the world. Across three centuries, Canada and the United States have been the closest of friends, partners, and allies. That's not to say that we don't occasionally have our differences as two sovereign and independent nations. We do. Or that we're going to agree on everything. We don't. But what binds us is immeasurably greater and more resilient than the few issues that might divide us. And it's in this light that Canada and the United States are working closely together on the challenges that are going to define the rest of this century. This includes ensuring the defense and security of our way of life, our borders, and most importantly, the people of our great nations. Developing secure sources of energy in an environmentally responsible manner, and harnessing the full potential of our closely integrated economies to create jobs and prosperity in both our countries. You, the hardworking and committed legislators of this great state, you focus on many of these same issues. Indeed, some of you over the years have had the opportunity to work with some of your Canadian counterparts, whether in the context of the Council of State Governments activities with Canada or in the activities of the International Legislators Forum, which has its next meeting in Brookings this coming June. The true measure of our relationship is not just about governments or business or investment or trade facts. Our relationship is about people. Our nations share similar immigrant histories. Our family ties and friendships stretch seamlessly across the border. And we see much of ourselves in each other. And we enjoy our mutual hospitality. In 2009, more than 158,000 South Dakotans visited Canada and Canadians visited South Dakota, spending a great deal of money in one another's jurisdictions. So these economic ties between Canada and the United States are simply without parallel anywhere. About $1.7 billion in goods and services crosses the border every single day. Canada and the United States are by far the biggest trading partners in the world. In fact, Canada and the United States trade far more than U.S. and China. Canada and the United States sells more to Canada than it does to the U.K., China, Germany and Japan combined. That's how deep this economic relationship is. And for 34 out of 50 U.S. states, Canada is your biggest customer. And that includes South Dakota, where something like 37% of what your state sells to the world is bought by Canada. Over the last 3 years, our two-way goods trade has averaged over $900 million a year. And you know, trade means jobs. Across the United States, the trade with Canada amounts to about 8 million jobs dependent on that trade. And in the state of South Dakota alone, it's over 24,000 jobs that are dependent on that trade with Canada. And beyond that, hundreds of jobs are with companies here in South Dakota that are investments by Canadians. So all these facts and figures go to show that our economies are very closely intertwined. In fact, we make things together, not simply just sell things to one another. Now, you here in South Dakota have a lot to be proud about in building and managing a strong economy that's weathered the recent recession far better than most. And successful businesses know that growth is spurred by expanding trade and not from closing borders and limiting opportunity. And in Canada, you have a very strong partner. Mr. Speaker, when it comes to energy, Canada is your biggest supplier. Our countries have built a tightly integrated energy infrastructure, including oil and gas pipelines and electricity grids. And Canada is now the largest and most reliable foreign supplier of oil, natural gas, electricity, and uranium to the United States. And together, we are achieving energy security in North America. Now, you import more oil every day from Canada than you do from Saudi Arabia and Kuwait combined, more than from Venezuela and Iraq combined. Canada's oil sands comprise the second largest oil deposit in the world, with more than 175 billion barrels in reserve. To handle further development of the oil sands resource and to meet the energy security needs of the U.S. Midwest, new pipeline construction is providing jobs and revenue in South Dakota and elsewhere. And at the same time, our two governments, Canada and the U.S., are working closely together to promote clean energy research and development, to advance work on carbon capture and storage, and to build a smart electrical grid. Mr. Speaker and members of the House, there's many, many facts and figures, but what really allows our close economic and energy relations to flourish are the values that we share. Both our countries believe in similar principles that shape our societies. Canada is a nation rooted in the values of freedom, democracy, human rights, and the rule of law. We believe in individual enterprise and fairness. Ours, like yours, is a nation where we respect the individual and seek to create a society that offers opportunity to all. It's because we have so much in common that our national interests throughout history have so often intersected. Our friendship has been manifested in the defense of our shared values, when Canadian and U.S. soldiers have fought and died together in the First and Second World Wars, in Korea, the Gulf War, Kosovo, Bosnia, and Afghanistan. Canadian military personnel have trained and worked with counterparts from South Dakota in many places, and I want to take this opportunity to commend and honor the brave soldiers of this state who serve around the world in the name of freedom, and those who have fallen in this service. In closing, Mr. Speaker, let me say that my office is committed with working with all South Dakota legislators and with the administration of Governor Dugard to do everything we can to enhance our linkages. Thank you very much for celebrating our relationship today and for the great honor you have given my country in inviting me to speak here this afternoon. We are indeed very lucky to have you as our closest of friends, neighbors, and allies. I hope all of you and your staffs will be able to join us later today as we continue our celebration of Canada Day in South Dakota with the reception this afternoon at 5:30 at the Ramcota. Thank you very much. Merci beaucoup.
Since we have a little break, I'd like to welcome back to this chamber former Representative Bill Thompson. I see him up in the balcony. Please welcome him back.
I would like to introduce my guest.
Please.
Did you hear me say personal privilege, please?
Granted, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. This is my friend, Jake Hubke. And Jake and Booker Noem campaigned heavily across the state. He's a wonderful, wonderful young man. He's 13, 7th grade, and he came to see his great-great-aunt Patty today. So I'd like you to welcome him. Thank you.
Thank you. I hope the great, great was because you're that good, not because you're that old. Representative Wick.
Personal privilege.
Granted.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today it's my honor and my good fortune to introduce our Doctor of the Day. Our Doctor of the Day comes from T, South Dakota. That's in my district along with Representative Steele. And she came back to South Dakota. She was educated at USD, came back to South Dakota after serving an internship. She's been here for 3.5 years. A very forward-looking doctor. She has her mobile office and all of the records in her computer, and she makes house calls. I'd like you to welcome Dr. Annette Bosworth.
Welcome, doctor. Thank you for coming and keep our caucus healthy. Anybody else?
Mr. Speaker, personal privilege, please.
Where am I going? So, Representative Ironcloud, granted.
Thank you very much. I'd like to say good afternoon to all our guests out there listening and my fellow representatives. Today is a very good day, and I would like to commend and acknowledge some individuals that have been promoting an event for over a decade, 11 years. And if any of you are aware or know that today was a Native American Day, we had many of our relatives and friends from across the country, many tribes, many nations, many generations have come to today and to support this event. And you know, in the event of in regards to better relations, you know, meeting each other, I'd like to acknowledge the two ladies up there and many other people that have made this event possible. And it's Melanie White Eagle and her mother Mary Ann Berry Hills McGowan. So if they would just stand, and her husband also. And so with that, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you for your for the time there, and I hope that maybe if any of you fellow representatives weren't able to make it this year, that next year that we will you could come and make it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Your presence today was certainly known. I could feel the drums up on third floor here, and did enjoy some of our state fry bread and a nice stew. It was very good. Thank you. Reports of standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, the Committee on Judiciary respectfully reports that House Bills 1018, 1019, and 1038 do pass, and House Bills 1003 and 1041 do pass, and House Bills 1042 and 1043 do pass and be placed on the consent calendar. House Bill 1048 was tabled. Roger W. Hunt, Chair. The Committee on State Affairs respectfully reports that House Bill 1054 and 1055 were deferred to the 41st Legislative Day. David Lusk, Chair.
Messages.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honor to transmit herewith Senate Bills 1, 23, 25, and 26, which have passed the Senate, and your favorable consideration is respectfully requested. Trudy Evanstead, Secretary.
Motions and resolutions.
House Concurrent Resolution 1001, a concurrent resolution honoring the historical, political, cultural, social, and economic relationships among Canada, the United States, and the state of South Dakota, and recognizing January 24, 2011 as Canada Day at the Capitol. Representative Consett moves that House Concurrent Resolution 1001 be adopted.
All those in favor of the Consett motion to adopt House Concurrent Resolution 1001 will vote yea. Those opposed will vote nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine and members shall proceed to vote. Thank you.
Representatives Cronin, Hoffman, Lust, Olson, Rosen, and Wink. Representatives Hoffman, Olson, and Rosen. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 68, excused 2.
House Concurrent Resolution 1001, having received majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared adopted.
House Concurrent Resolution 1002, a concurrent resolution to declare February 6, 2011 as Ronald Reagan Day in South Dakota. And the Speaker has waived the committee referral of House Concurrent Resolution 1002.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're now going to move into first reading of House bills. There's quite a few today. The Constitution requires us to read the title of each bill in public forum, so they're going to divvy out a handful to several people up here. They'll be reading them simultaneously, so you will probably not be able to recognize not one title, but you have the luxury and the freedom to go online at any given time and look them up and read them at your leisure. First reading of House bills. An interesting exercise.
I opened up on the Senate side
Speaker appoints House Bill 1074 to Ag, 1075 State Affairs, 1076 Judiciary, 1077 Education, 1078 Local Government, 1079 State Affairs, 1080 Education, 1081 Taxation, 1082 Ag, 1083 Education, 1084 Judiciary, 1085 Commerce, 1086 State Affairs, 1087 Judiciary, 1088, 89, and 90 to State Affairs, 1091 to Education, 1092 Local Government, 1093 to Education, 1094 State Affairs, 1095 Education, 1096 Local Government, 1097 Ag, 1098 Tax, 1099 Local Government, 1101 to state affairs, 1102 judiciary, 1103 appropriations, 1104 local governments, 1105, 6, 7, and 8 to state affairs, 1109 local governments, 1110 to state affairs, 1111 appropriations, 1112 and 1113 state affairs, 1114 local government, 1115 appropriations, 1116 state affairs, 1117, 1118 local government, 1119 commerce, 1120 health, 1121 state affairs, 1122 transportation, 1123 and 24 to ag, 1125 and 26 to state affairs, 1127 transportation, 1128 tax, 1129 ag, 1130 to state affairs, 1131 tax, 1132 ag, 1133 education, HDR 1002 to state affairs, HDR 1003 state affairs. I made it. Again, these titles have to be read in open forum, and now we will have the first reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 1, an act to make form and style revisions to certain statutes related to natural resources. Senate Bill 23, an act to update certain citations to federal regulations regarding pipeline safety inspection. Senate Bill 25, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the use of funds in the telephone solicitation account. Senate Bill 26, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the implementation of proposed rate or practice by a gas or electric public utility.
Speaker appoints Senate Bill 1 to Ag, Senate Bill 23, 25, and 26 to Commerce. Consent calendar. Ladies and gentlemen, the consent calendar is an efficiency tool that we use here so we don't have to actually debate bills that have never had a no vote or any opposing testimony. We take them in a group. There is about six on there. We have a request from Representative Torno that House Bill 1024 be removed from the consent calendar. We have done that. It'll be on tomorrow's calendar. And at this point, I would ask that all the House bills in the second reading
will be read. House Bill 1013, an act to revise the membership of the Board of Examiners for Counselors and Marriage and Family Therapists. House Bill 1025, an act to revise certain provisions regarding references to the Internal Revenue Code. House Bill 1028, an act to revise the due dates of certain tax returns and remittances. House Bill 1023, an act to revise certain provisions regarding how South Dakota Retirement System survivor benefits and disability benefits are handled in regard to children. And House Bill 1030, an act to revise the provisions relating to placement of surplus lines insurance and tax allocation of surplus lines insurance.
The consent calendar bills, having had their second reading up for consideration and final passage, are there any questions on any item on the consent calendar? Any questions? Hearing none, the question before the House is final passage of House bills on the consent calendar. Those in favor will vote yea. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine, and members shall proceed to vote. Usta.
Representatives Kopp, Van Gerpen, and Vercio. And Mosher, did you say aye?
Thank you.
Representative Van Gerpen. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yea 69, excused 1.
The bills on the consent calendar, having received majority vote, are hereby declared passed. Any questions on the titles? Hearing none, titles are deemed correct. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 1021 has had its second reading.
Okay. House Bill 1021, having had its second reading, is up for consideration. Final passage. Are there any remarks? Representative Feinstein.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill, House Bill 21, comes to us from the Department of Corrections. And what happens is currently the Department of Corrections should have notice and an opportunity for a fair hearing before a parole file is being opened for inspection. What our current law says, and what it does today, is if for some reason a parole file is subpoenaed, the judge would issue an order for inspection of the parole file without a notice and for the opportunity of the Department of Corrections to review the file and even to be heard on it. And why is that a problem? It's a problem because there could be a subpoena, because sometimes it might be issued in connection, and we're talking about somebody that's been through, adjudicated through the system, in connection with new criminal charges, could be related to a divorce, could be related to child custody, or civil litigation by and against and between inmates and other parolees. And again, why is this important? Because a lot of times these files contain a lot of confidential information. And what would that be? Well, it could be communications, non-public, pre-sentence, witness investigation information, mental health questions, alcohol and drug treatment records, identity of witnesses and locations, various things like confidential informant information and other information that is related to the institutional security. The parole files do contain a lot of this stuff from a lot of sources other than what Department of Correction has, such as the court, the treatment, law enforcement, and the victims. The parole board receives and uses this information throughout their processing, but they get the information from victims, from witnesses, law enforcement, and others, often on the condition that that information remains confidential and the identity of the person reporting it is not disclosed to the inmate. And so you can sort of see why this is sort of sensitive. And it is vital that these victims can be assured that information that they share with the parole board or with the Department of Corrections will not be disclosed to the inmate. Disclosure of this confidential information provided by victims, provided by witnesses, provided by law enforcement and others can harm reporting persons and open them to retaliation and expose them to potentially other harm or embarrassing information about the inmate. And I urge you to vote for this because it corrects this little loophole that hopefully the Department of Correction will have that opportunity to at least know about it and know about it the way the current bill is written. They have a 20-day notice provision that they have an opportunity to come back and at least say, hey, let's review this. I'm sure we can give you most of the file or a lot of the file, but there is confidential stuff that we can't. And I do believe there is a friendly amendment that may that will adjust that time and other things, and I'll stand by for questions. And I urge you to vote yes on 1021.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Representative Gosh.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have an amendment.
Would that be 1021JA?
Yes, it is.
Has it been distributed?
Yes, it is.
You wish
yes,
to move it at this time?
I do.
Second.
The Gosh motion have been moved and second. Are there any comments? Representative Gosh.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, from the amendment itself, it may be hard to determine what it's actually going to read like after these changes are made, if they're made, so I'm going to read it to you. Started on page 1, line 15, it would read, this is with the changes, after notice to the Secretary of Corrections and an opportunity for hearing on any objections to inspection, the Secretary shall have 10 days after receipt of the notice to inform the court if the Secretary requests a hearing. And then further down on page 2, starting with line 11, it would read, ordered by a circuit court or subpoena after notice to the Secretary and an opportunity for a hearing on any objections to inspection. The Secretary shall have 10 days after receipt of the notice to inform the court if the Secretary requests a hearing. This amendment came from the Deputy Secretary of Corrections, and I believe that it does not change the tenor of the bill, but would comport with some concerns that a couple of us had on the length of the of the time frame for notice and the issue regarding subpoenas. So with this amendment, subpoenas would still be allowed, but still subject to a hearing if the secretary would so choose to request one in light of some concerns he may have. So with that, I'd urge support of the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any further comments on the Gosch motion to amend? Hearing none. All those in favor of the Gosch motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Any further comments on House Bill 1021 as amended? Hearing none, the question before the House is final consideration of House Bill 1021 as amended. Those in favor will vote yea. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine. Members shall proceed to vote.
Representative Klocek. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 69.
House Bill 1021, as amended, has received majority vote of the members elect, hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, title is deemed correct.
House Bill 1011, an act to revise certain provisions pertaining to domestic abuse programs.
House Bill 1011, having had its second reading, is up for final consideration and passage. Are there any remarks?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hawley.
Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen. I was on, this came through the House Health Committee, and it came through as a Department of Social Services bill. They had done a study group last year with providers and directors, victim advocates, and providers associations, and found out that our current statutes were outdated, and they need to be updated to what we're actually doing, and so that's what this bill does. There's about Section 1 and 2 of the bill updates the statutes that are used by counties to fund domestic abuse violence programs. Section 1 clarifies that counties may not receive individual client information when they're requesting funding. And Section 2 adds that programs funded by the counties must meet the minimum requirements for domestic violence programs. And so it's just updating the language is what they're currently doing right now. Section 3 and 4 of the bill update the statutes by the Department of Social Services as to the primary funding from the federal government. Section 3 indicates that the program shall serve victims of domestic violence and or sexual assault as a primary purpose, but it also adds victim advocacy and client confidentiality as basic services. And that's currently what we're getting for funding. And Section 4 updates the current statute that provides the rulemaking authority for the Department of Social Services. And then Sections 5 through 14 are just totally repealed as being outdated. I ask for your consideration of House Bill 1011, and if you have any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Hearing no further remarks, the question before the House is final consideration of House Bill 1011. All those in favor will vote yea. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine, and members shall proceed to vote.
Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 69.
House Bill 1011, having received majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, title is deemed correct.
House Bill 1029, an act to revise certain provisions concerning the taxation of telecommunications companies.
House Bill 1029, having had its second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Representative Wick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Fellow members of the House, House Bill 1029 addresses Chapter 1033, which currently provides two different ways for wired telecom companies to be taxed. Companies with less than $75 million in gross receipts pay a 4% tax on their gross receipts. Companies with gross receipts over $75 million or who do not provide local exchange service are centrally assessed. Recently, our last big centrally assessed telecom company went below the $75 million threshold. The transition caused a significant shift in funding for schools who got more revenue, a plus this year, and counties who lost revenue. With the change to this company, only a few companies, small companies not providing local exchange service are centrally assessed. The bill preserves the status quo and prevents companies through mergers or acquisitions or other growth of their business from exceeding the $75 million threshold and becoming centrally assessed, giving you a bounce back and forth between the two different types of taxation. The threshold was actually increased from 50 to 75 million just a year ago in 2009. And it preserves the status quo by simply getting rid of the $75 million threshold. And all of the companies providing local exchange service will pay the gross receipts tax. Because only a few companies will be centrally assessed, the bill does away with the odd, they call it an odd telecom value, outside of the city limits. And the provisions in the current law. In the addition, the bill clarifies which provisions apply to which taxpayers. For example, Section 1 specifies that only the companies paying the gross receipts tax need to file a report showing their gross receipts. And finally, because the language of this chapter has not been frequently amended, the LRC has made quite a few changes in style and form when the bill is addressed, so that's a lot of the changes that are there. For those that might be curious, in the process of these changes, the counties collectively lost $720,000 from the transition, and at the same time they lost that much, the school districts will gain about $2 million from the transition. I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Fiker.
Question for the previous speaker.
Please state your question.
I was just curious if there's a net loss of $700,000+ to counties, is there any way that those revenues might be made up?
Representative Wick, would you like to answer that question?
There aren't any provided for in this bill.
Thank you. Representative Fiker, you still have the floor. Thank you. Any further remarks? Hearing none, the question before the House is final consideration of House Bill 1029. All those in favor will vote yea, those opposed nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine. Members shall proceed to vote.
Representatives Carson and Hawley. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 68, nays 1.
House Bill 1029, having received majority vote of the members-elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, title is deemed correct.
House Bill 1009, an act to repeal the authority of the Department of Environment and Natural Resources to regulate public swimming places and bulk water haulers.
Tongue twister. House Bill 1009, having had its second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any questions or any remarks? Excuse me. Any remarks? Representative Hoffman?
Mr. Speaker, I do have some remarks on the bill. I'm wondering if Amendment 1009 is going to be discussed by the promoter of that amendment. I'm not going to bring it up if there isn't going to be discussion on it.
We're on the bill, and I'm asking if there's any remarks on House Bill 1009, and I have your name here, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll give you the up and down in a hurry on this. The Department of Natural Resources in the past has overseen the testing of the water in swimming lakes, swimming ponds, and swimming pools, along with of course, all the regulations and testing into the drinking water supply in our municipalities. The liability for all of those swimming ponds, swimming lakes, and swimming pools does not end up with the Department of Natural Resources. Therefore, those swimming public places and bulk water haulers, liability falls into the jurisdiction of where they lie, and by alleviating our second reading looking over those, we will save the state of South Dakota $24,000. I urge you to help us to alleviate an oversight, which is already, it's a doubling of governmental affairs in private matters within publics, cities, and their municipalities, and I urge you to vote yes on this bill 1009. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Representative Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the body, I would just like to point out that House Bill 1009 is a step in the right direction because it eliminates agency rulemaking for at least two particular areas, water haulers and swimming pools, etc. But I'd like to draw to your attention the fact that this bill should perhaps be defeated with a view towards taking away the authority of the department here to make rules as broadly as exists in current statute. We are the third body of government in the state of South Dakota. There's the executive branch, there's the judicial branch, and there's the legislative branch. The executive branch is to fulfill the laws that we initiate and enact. But when we delegate very broadly, as we have done in this existing piece of legislation, the authority to a particular agency to do whatever they wanted with regards to these particular rules. We don't talk about a particular aspect of rules. We don't talk about any of those. We just give absolute broad authority to this particular department. Whenever you see this in proposed legislation or in existing legislation, you should ask yourself, why are we delegating to the executive branch of government our responsibility and authority as a legislative branch of government? Now, I realize in many respects the agencies know more about some of these areas than we do. And so we should delegate authority to them. But more specific delegation should be presented, not such broad and sweeping. We have the Rules Review Committee, which is charged with reviewing all agency rules. But we can only act on those rules in accordance with the authority given us by this legislative body. And when you give absolutely broad authority in any category to any state agencies, you are preventing the Rules Review Committee from many times being able to do its job. I'm making this speech. Some of you have heard me make it before. But it is important that we maintain the balance of powers in state government. And that means not giving any state agency any more authority than we can specifically designate in legislation like this. I believe this is a step in the right direction. I should certainly say that we should go forth and pass this bill. But please, whenever you see delegation of rulemaking authority under 1-26, ask yourself in the future, the question is, do we want to give such broad authority? Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the body.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Representative Klocek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm members of the body. I move Amendment 1009-TA and waive the reading. I believe it has been dispersed.
We have a motion to move Amendment 1009-TA. Is there a second?
Second.
Remarks. Representative Klocek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and honorable members of the body. I, too, agree with the good representative from Sioux Falls that this is a step in the right direction. Taking it away from the Department of Environment and Natural Resources is a good move. I do support that. However, this amendment would move it to the Department of Health and give them the rulemaking authority to do so. Why the Department of Health? We only have to look down to the state of Nebraska. And on their handout, on their page 13, they do have this authority to regulate now. Yes, we would save $28,000 or $24,000, but what price is public safety? These are not private pools that were alluded to earlier. Many of them are municipal public pools. And I feel by leaving this totally unregulated, we are leaving it at our children and the people that use these pools at somewhat of a risk. Oh, yes, the local authorities will check if there's a problem, and they may have to close the pool. But who will guarantee that they open the pool? Who will do the testing? Where will the uniform standards of safety be? Yes, $24,000 to you and I is a lot of money. But in the broad spectrum of things, for the public health and safety of South Dakota, $24,000 or whatever amount that the Department of Health would have if we did pass my amendment would be cheap. It would save a lot of health issues, in my opinion, a lot of safety issues from different health aspects, and not just the pools, but the water haulers. Something would happen. There would be some type of contamination in the water. They were not able to catch it. They would have the equipment provided by the Department of Health to test for those things. And I do have quite a bit of information on the state of Nebraska, and it's page 13 on the Department of Health website governing the pools, and you would sure refer to that. That's just one example. Many other states do the same thing and put it under the aspects of the Department of Health. There's an old saying, you can pay me now or you can pay me later, and I certainly hope that we don't pay the price for not doing this by totally leaving it unregulated for the good of the public safety of the people of South Dakota. I would stand by for any questions on this amendment. I would encourage you to pass the amendment and then go on past the bill for the good of our children and the people that use our swimming pools, for the good of public safety for the people of South Dakota. Thank you, Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, and honorable members of the body.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks on the Klocek motion to amend? Representative Tornell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question for the representative moving the amendment.
Please state your question.
Representative, is it your opinion, based on your comments there, that municipal pools, absent this amendment, would be unregulated at the local level?
Representative Klocek, would you like to answer that question?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is my opinion they would be underregulated. They would not. They may have some things that they do, but there would be no authority for them, no standard rules or procedures for them to follow the way. By repealing it from the Department of Environment and Natural Resources.
Thank you. Representative Tornell, you still have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, ladies and gentlemen, my good friend, the representative, is incorrect in his statements. The fact is local municipalities have this authority to regulate those pools, And at the local level is where this regulation should take place. They're the most close in proximity in dealing with these situations. And I would urge you to defeat the amendment because we don't need this over-regulation at the state level. Let's leave this with the cities and towns that have the pools and those officials that draft ordinances and that have the institutions in place to regulate those pools. We don't need PIER to get involved in local pool issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Representative Carson.
Question for the gentleman with the amendment.
Please state your question.
What amount of dollars and cents will this put on the Department of Health?
Representative Klocek, would you like to answer that question?
Mr. Speaker, it is my understanding that there would be a minimal amount. It's potential of $20,000. It's anybody's guess, but it would be my estimate that it should be close to the same amount that was in the Department of Environment, which was one half of an FTE, and that should handle it.
Thank you. Representative Carson, you still have the floor. Thank you.
Mr.
Any
Speaker.
Further remarks? Representative Hoffman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. With all great due respect and indifference to the great representative from Bonhomme, Douglas, Hutchinson, and Turner County, let this be a lesson to all of us that it is a good idea to get to your committee on time and not miss the first 10 minutes because the good Secretary Perner, gave a wonderful explanation of all of the liabilities that lie within cities, municipalities, and counties of governing their own water, making it very easy for the state to not incur any great health dangers to the public by enforcing and passing 1009. I urge you to defeat this amendment and then go on to pass House Bill 1009. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Would anyone like to speak before Representative Klocek speaks a second time on the amendment?
Question for the good senator from Sioux Falls.
Representative Klocek, you have the floor.
Question for...
Please state your question.
For the gentleman from Sioux Falls, or anyone that would be willing to answer it, does this, by repealing this statute, does this mean that each municipality could set their own standards for E. coli and other bacterial coliforms, different types of levels of chlorine and different disinfectants up to certain standards, or would they have to adopt uniform standards, not just on the federal level, but could they waiver and go tougher or weaker than that?
Representative Tornow, would you like to answer that question? Would anyone here like to answer that question? Hearing none, Representative Klocek, you still have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Honorable members of the body, I rest my case. Each municipality would have developed their own standards, and safety would, again, be a question. This is not a question of just $24,000. This is a question of public safety and public good and doing right by the people of South Dakota.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks on the Klocek motion to amend? Representative Nelson.
Mr. Speaker, as indicated in the Agriculture Committee, by doing away with this provision and not allowing the amendment, it does not hamper or endanger the public health. We need to remember that there's thousands of bodies of untested, chemicaled waters throughout the state of South Dakota. Clearly, South Dakotans do not need the redundancy in the bureaucracy already there and the further expenditure of public funds when such are at such a dire loss in our economy, our state budget to begin with. I recommend defeating this amendment.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Hearing no further remarks, the question before the House is all those in favor of the Klocek motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay.
Aye.
Motion fails. We're back to House Bill 1009. Any further remarks? Representative Feinstein.
Mr. Speaker, I have a question for the sponsor.
Please state your question.
The question I have is, they said in the bill they're talking about a $29,000 cost. Not in the bill, but I understand there's a $29,000 cost. But I was also of the understanding that when a municipality or somebody who has this public swimming pool sends in their sample, don't they pay for it? Don't they pay for the service of having this inspection done?
Representative Hoffman, would you like to answer that question?
I do, sir.
Please.
Thank you. The costs that are incurred of the actual water sample are always paid for by the municipality or the community or the city that's having the sample done. What the cost savings will be to the Department of Natural Resources and ultimately to us is paperwork, paper shuffling, FTE, some travel when a community wants to have an inspection come out or they have a problem. Sometimes they use the Department of Natural Resources for a pool specialist. And basically it's personnel, man hours, woman hours, and paperwork that the $24,000 savings will be seen in.
Thank you. Representative Feinstein, you still have the floor.
Well, thank you. I guess my question, I have more questions about this bill. It seems too simple on its face. And for example, if the municipalities are incurring the cost to cover the cost of doing the sample and doing the work, why doesn't that cover the $29,000 too? Okay, so now if this bill passes, somebody's going to have to do that work. And I think what we're doing is merely shifting that back to the cities, shifting that back to the municipalities. In the end of the day, the costs are going to still be expended. And I guess the decision for this legislature and this body is who is going to pay for it. Is it going to come out of the taxpayers of South Dakota and the general fund, or is it going to go back to the municipality? But the job still is going to have to be done. If they have to hire an expert to come in and speak to them and help them shuffle the paperwork or do what they have to, the cost is going to be incurred anyway, somewhere. And I think in the end of the day, who's better to do that? I guess I would contend that the state's better to be the coordinator of that. And I would say, if we have to, let's raise the fee by which the cities have to do. And I believe there'd be a big cost savings in the end. The total dollars in the end in the pockets of those that matter, the citizens of South Dakota, is better off served if this bill is defeated. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Hearing none, the question before the House is final consideration of House Bill 1009. All those in favor will vote yea, those opposed nay. Clerk will unlock the voting machine. Members shall proceed to vote.
Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 60, nays 9.
House Bill 1009, having received majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, title is deemed correct.
House Bill 1037, an act to revise certain posting requirements relating to hunting in the Black Hills Fire Protection District.
House Bill 1037, having had its second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Representative Virtue.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill that we have before you here is particularly relevant only in the Black Hills Fire Protection District. Give you a little bit of background. Anywhere else in this state besides the Black Hills Fire Protection District, if I would walk onto your property, by 1 foot, take 1 step into your property, I am automatically assumed as being a trespasser. The reason that we have signage requirements in the Black Hills is very, very simple, and they're called grazing leases. There are a lot of fences on public property in the Black Hills. They're not all private property delineators. So those that do, we require that they be signed, no hunting, no trespassing, etc. Now, as a great testament to Secretary Vonk's program to make his CSOs a lot more landowner friendly, several of them in the Black Hills have been getting complaints from landowners concerning two things. One is that people who they called hunters, I will call them slob hunters, I guess,
would pull up right into their drive. Big gate says no hunting. They'll walk on the property anyway and hunt. The reason they do that is they know that there's a special rule in this law that says unless you have your contact information on there as the landowner, that's not a valid site. Now, they will leave when asked to leave, but they know they can go on there, and many times they don't get caught. And if they do, they can just use that as an excuse. So the landowners brought this to the CSOs. One of them came to me and said, would you please do this for us? I really commend them for that. There are several questions came to my mind right away. One of them was, what if somebody wants to know who owns property out there? The ones who have you posted out of their property for no hunting say, we don't want you calling us or writing us. A no hunting sign means no hunting. And you can go to the county and get landowner information in the hills just like you can anywhere else. So if you're looking for a private ranch to hunt on, that's how you would do that. A lot of people say, well, then why, you know, got all that public land, why would you want to hunt on private land? Because the private land is where what little crops are being grown in the hills are grown. That's where the oats are. That's where the alfalfa is. Also, if you have horses or cattle out in the hills, you have that feeding area for them, and that attracts the deer and the elk also. The other question I had was, can anybody just put a sign up anywhere they want and protect one of their favorite hunting spots? Yes, they could, but that's also a violation of South Dakota law. So they're looking at some sort of, for those of us who know where those properties are, some sort of retribution from the law. So I would, at this point then, ask for your support that the only thing we do here is strike the requirement to put your name, address, and phone number on that sign and leave the requirement that you must post your property in the hills because of the unknown quantity of what is and what isn't private property. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Hearing none, the question before the House is final consideration of House Bill 1037. All those in favor will vote yea, those opposed nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine. Members shall proceed to vote. The Speaker would like to take a personal privilege at this point. I would like to introduce to the House my daughter who's paging. My daughter Brenna, please stand up. Please welcome her. This is my way to bring witnesses home that we actually do work out here. It's not all play.
Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 68.
House Bill 1037, having received majority vote of members elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, title is deemed correct.
House Bill 1022, an act to revise certain provisions regarding veterans' credited service and benefits under the South Dakota Retirement System and under the South Dakota Deferred Compensation Plan.
House Bill 1022, having had its second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Representative Wick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, fellow members. House Bill 1022 is an act to revise certain retirement provisions. And it really affects nothing but our military. It updates South Dakota retirement service statutes to coordinate with federal law regarding military leave of absence by adopting an additional provision to comply with USERRA service credit provisions and adopting both required and voluntary provisions of the HART Act regarding death and disability benefits and adopting the new HART Act provisions regarding withdrawals from the Supplemental Retirement Plan, SRP. The Section 1 adds a definition to the present SDCL 31247 for the qualified military service. Section 2 brings 31286 into strict compliance with the Federal Uniformed Service Employment and Reemployment Rights Act of 1994, which is USERRA, and Section 3 brings the South Dakota Retirement System law into compliance with the Federal Heroes Earning Assistance and Relief Tax Act of 2008, which is the HART Act. Section 4 brings the South Dakota Retirement System Supplemental Retirement Plan into voluntary compliance with the HART Act, and quite simply, this is benefits for servicemen that have served. When they come back, they can, after a certain amount of time, regain all of their lost time while they were serving on active duty. And the part that on the HART Act takes care of the heroes, those that are wounded or were deceased. The actuarial physical note estimates the cost of this between $5 and $10 million, assuming military leave experience remains at approximately the current level. Some of these changes need to be made to comply with the federal law, and all are consistent with the ongoing South Dakota Retirement System support for public employees called into military service. I would appreciate your positive vote for House Bill 1022. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Hearing none, the question before the House is final consideration of House Bill 1022. All those in favor will vote yea, those opposed nay. Clerk will unlock the voting machine. Members shall proceed to vote.
Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 69.
House Bill 1022, having received majority vote of members elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, title deemed correct.
House Bill 1034, an act to repeal the requirement for motor vehicle liability insurance safety rating discounts for certain older motor vehicle drivers.
House Bill 1034, having had its second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Representative Willitson. Thank you. Representative Hawley. Please, Representative Hawley.
Mr. Speaker, I'll try it again here. 1034 was a bill brought forward by the Division of Insurance, and it's on a statute that basically is just asking us to repeal it. Currently, there's a statute that requires the offering of rating discounts to those drivers 55 age or older who complete a safe driving course. Virtually all of the automobile insurance insurers currently offer a safe driving discount for those over 54 who've taken a program. There are several programs nationally of which AAA and our offer it. So this would, the other important portion of the provision that the Division of Insurance was concerned about was that they were required by the statute to approve the safety courses. And currently the Division has never approved such a course, and they have no staff they're dedicated to or have the expertise to judge the safety course. So for that reason, the bill would repeal these statutes and make that program totally voluntary. And I would ask that you support that, and I'll stand by if you have any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Any further remarks? Hearing no further remarks. Question before the House is final consideration of House Bill 1034. All those in favor will vote yea. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will unlock the voting machine. Members shall proceed to vote.
Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 69.
House Bill 1034, having received majority vote of members elect, hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, title is deemed correct.
House Bill 1035, an act to revise the process for the collection of the annual insurance company examination assessment fee.
House Bill 1035, having had its second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Representative Hawley, I think we got it right this time.
Practice makes perfect. Also, you learn what questions not to ask in committee, I'm gathering now. I would like to talk to 1035. 1035 was also brought forward by the Division of Insurance, and it deals with the assessment of the annual examination assessment fee. All insurance companies, domestic companies in the state of South Dakota, are examined once every 5 years, and domestic and non-domestic can be examined any time based on their financial market conduct issues. The cost of that is passed back to the state in examination fund, and then out of that fund, then all the companies, the 1,400 admitted companies in South Dakota, pay an assessment for that. Right now, the assessment has a limit of up to $150 per time when they can be assessed, and this bill is asking that we increase that to $1,000. Once the fund gets under $50,000, it's assessed. Right now, there's about $70,000 in that fund, and we've got two audits just being completed for two companies, which are going to cost over $1 million. So in order to get that assessment covered, they'd have to just turn around and keep billing the companies. So all this does is a little cleanup to allow them. We can bill them at one time and makes it real straightforward. I'm available if you have any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Any further remarks? Hearing none, the question before the House is final consideration of House Bill 1035. All those in favor will vote yea, those opposed nay. Clerk will unlock the voting machine. Members shall proceed to vote.
Representatives Blake and Gibson. Mr. Speaker, all members present have voted.
The clerk will please display the vote.
Mr. Speaker, there were yeas 69.
House Bill 1035, having received majority vote of members elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, title is deemed correct. Announcements. Representative Boomgarden.
Two announcements, please. One is no Health and Human Service Committee tomorrow morning, and the second announcement is from Senator Hunoff. They have asked the Department of Social Services to do a legislative presentation on the Medicaid state plan. All legislators can attend. It's primarily addressed towards the Health Committee, but it will be in room 412 tomorrow, about 15 minutes after session.
Thank you. Any further announcements? Representative Dryden.
Thank you. Tomorrow morning, the Joint Appropriations Committee will meet 8 a.m. We're going to listen to the agency budget review of the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. 8 to noon, research LRC room 1 and 2. And everyone is welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. I think you'll have some visitors. Representative Blake.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Today in the LRC, right following session, our doctor of the day, who has just dropped her pager down through the window. Being that she has kind of a unique practice of going out and seeing patients in their homes, she is going to be talking about that and some of the money-saving advantages to that. So she'll be in the LRC immediately following. LRC 1.
Thank you. Representative Virchow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Bit of confusion about tomorrow's Transportation Committee meeting. Yes, there is a meeting tomorrow at the regular time. It is not Wednesday. There was a little bit of a typo when we set that up. So Transportation Committee, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m.
Very good. Representative Willitson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is no House Tax Committee meeting tomorrow. However, there will be one Thursday morning, so watch your mail.
We found a couple of bills for you. Representative Hoffman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. For everyone's knowledge, tomorrow morning we will get our first interview process, question and answer, with the new Secretary of Agriculture, Secretary Walt Bones. So I am looking very forward to getting the opportunity to chair that meeting. So if you want to see some really wonderful flubs by a first-time chairman in this great body of ours, 745 House of Natural Resources, Ag Natural Resources, and we will have the state veterinarian give a little talk, and also some interesting issues coming to us from the brand board. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Any further announcements? Representative Kirkaby.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's a reminder, House Local Government, 10 a.m. tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further announcements? Hearing none. Representative Turbeville.
Mr. Speaker, I move we adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor of adjournment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
We're adjourned.